We'll delve into this topic and ask the question, who's responsible, and how this impacts nursing and what it means for you as a patient. Listeners, if you have any questions or comments, call in today. The number is 845-624-1300. And joining us now is Edie Brouse. Hi, Edie. How are you?
Good, Barbara. How are you?
Oh, I'm well, thanks. Before we begin, Edie, I just want to bring to light an email, actually, that I received this morning from a listener. She's a nurse practitioner in Louisiana, and she asked not to be identified. She ran a clinic in rural Louisiana town for the poor and underserved. Many of her patients have no transportation, so they would walk to see her in her clinic. And because of the circumstances that we are talking about today, she was actually forced to close down her clinic, and now she's worried about what's happening to her patients. The circumstances are way too detailed to go into on air to address these. So, Edie, maybe after the show I could touch base with you and see if there's anything maybe we can do or any information we could provide to this nurse practitioner. I just want to say, nurse practitioner out in Louisiana, thanks for your email, thanks for listening, and we'll see what we can do to try to help you out. So, Edie, this is such a volatile topic that we're talking about today. Nurses go into the profession to try to help people, and now they're being wrongfully prosecuted for their acts. Why is that? Is it a systems failures? How is this happening?
Well, it's not just nurses. My focus, obviously, because I represent nurses, is on its impact on nurses, and more importantly, the impact of criminalization on patient safety. Mm-hmm. But it is certainly happening with all providers. It's happening with physicians and pharmacists as well. And I think there are a number of causes for it. One is there is, and even within our own culture as healthcare providers, there is an expectation of perfection in practice, which is unachievable. And another reason is because the traditional focus on error in the healthcare system has been to blame the individual. We've traditionally done that rather than looking at the system. It is a system problem. Almost invariably, when there is a problem with a medication error or a wrong treatment or a fall or anything where there's a bad patient outcome, almost invariably, if you do a root cause analysis and look at all the contributing causes, you will find that it is a system problem. And that if there were preventive measures that were put in place in the system, the provider would not have been able to make this mistake. But traditionally, what we have always done when something goes wrong is ask the question, who's to blame? And the question really needs to change. It shouldn't be who's to blame. It should be what went wrong. And after saying who's to blame, our next question is always, how do we correct the provider? How do we discipline the provider? How do we counsel them or send them to education or take an action on their license or sue them or do whatever else we're doing? And after asking what went wrong instead of who's to blame, the second question instead of how do we discipline the provider should be, how do we prevent this from recurring?
Let's break this down a little bit. Actually, blaming is easy. It's easy to blame and problem goes away just by blaming someone and it's over and done with. Like you said, though, it is a systems error. So let's break it down into steps just so the listeners can get an idea of exactly what occurs. When a nurse is in a hospital administering care, she's a professional providing care for that patient and she is obligated to do the best that she can. Make sure no mistakes happen and keep that patient healthy and have that patient move out of that hospital and make sure they're on their way home safe. What happens? What are some of the situations that are going on that would cause these mistakes to occur?
If you just let's take medication administration as an example, let's take one patient that received the incorrect medication and as a result of that had a bad outcome. Traditionally, what we would do is we would just look at the end user, which would be the nurse that gave the medication, and say, well, you didn't follow the five rights, you didn't do this, you didn't do that, you didn't follow our procedures and policies, you departed from the standards of practice, therefore it's all your fault. You're a sloppy nurse, you're negligent, you're not conscientious enough, whatever. And then we'll discipline that nurse, and supposedly, like you said, we'll feel better. Unfortunately, that doesn't keep the next patient safe. It doesn't keep the next patient from being a victim of the same kind of medication error, because all we've done is assume that this is because of a provider error, which it almost never is. So look at all the steps that are required for a patient to receive a medication. We'll talk in any system, but particularly in hospitals. the first thing that happens to happen is the physician or the nurse practitioner or the PA or whoever's writing the order has to enter the order in some system, either in a computerized system or handwrite the order. You've got one problem right there. If it's an old paper-driven system, the order can be illegible, it can be misread or misinterpreted because of the way it was read. If you have a computerized system, they have their own potential for errors as well. The order then may go to pharmacy. Pharmacy may misread the error. Pharmacy may misread the order. Pharmacy may commit an error. Pharmacy may send the wrong medication up. Or pharmacy has problems just like nursing does in terms of staffing. Maybe they don't have a technician who can deliver the medication. So technically it's a medication error if it's substantially late, if the order is written and it should be given within a certain period of time, and it's not because it can't come up from the pharmacy in a timely fashion, the nurse is going to be blamed because the medication was given late. Then it could arrive incorrectly. It could be the wrong medication that came up. The calculation for the dose could be wrong. There are a 100 different steps between the time a provider decides that a medication needs to be ordered on a patient and the time the patient actually receives the medication. Any problem at any one of those steps can create the medication error. And traditionally, what we'll do then is just blame the nurse for giving the wrong med or giving it at the wrong time or giving it by the wrong route rather than looking at all the systemic problems that would allow that to happen. Let me give you the example that really pulled me into this issue because it still bothers me is the case that everybody's probably most familiar with in Wisconsin, Madison, Wisconsin, where a 16-year-old was in active labor. And the physician ordered a antibiotic for her because she had a positive strep test. The facility had recently put in a policy that they expected their obstetric nurses to anticipate the need for an epidural. So when the nurse who was taking care of this patient went to the medication room to get the antibiotic, she also pulled out the epidural. The tubing wasn't available at the time, so both of the meds were sat down on the counter in the med room. She went back to her patient. A little while later, someone came to her and said, "Your tubing is ready." So she scooped everything up and went back to the bedside. Unfortunately, she inadvertently hung the epidural instead of the antibiotic, and the 16-year-old died. They did a crash section, and they got the baby out, but I think there might be some neurological sequela. The response was the typical traditional blame and shame response that we always have in our culture, and that was to blame this nurse, fire the nurse, report this nurse to the Board of Nursing, and think you're safe, your patients are a lot safer now because you disciplined this lousy nurse. This nurse who had been there for 15 years as an excellent provider with great performance appraisals was used as a resource and a mentor for people. Mm-hmm. It's suddenly now the only reason that we've had a bad outcome in this hospital. If you did a root cause analysis of this particular medication error, you would find a lot of things that could have happened that would have prevented this from happening. Having a more conscientious nurse is nowhere even on that list because that's not where the problem was. When you go to put gasoline in your car, if you tried to use a regular car engine and put diesel fuel in it, you would not be able to do it because the nozzles are not compatible. However, you can give epidural through IV tubing that was meant for antibiotic because it is compatible. That's the first problem. It shouldn't be compatible. That should be a mistake a nurse cannot make. The automobile industry and the oil industry has not assumed that human people will never make mistakes like we do in healthcare. They assume at some point somebody is going to try to put the wrong type of fuel into their engine. So let's make the nozzles completely incompatible so that that cannot happen. And that's what should have happened here. That would have prevented that error from ever happening. You also need to look at the fatigue level of this nurse, which is also not anywhere on this list. You shouldn't have a nurse who's working 60 hours a week and not expect that there will be a human error, because there absolutely will be. There are a lot of things that could have happened that would have prevented this error from occurring, and our response has always been just to blame the nurse that made the mistake, and that's what we did here. Another example that we're very familiar with, where the hospital took the exact opposite approach, is in Indianapolis. in Indiana when we had the neonatal ICU, that ICU only kept adult pediatric medications in their unit because they only took care of children there. So for safety reasons, they did not have adult medications in there. Heparin in adult doses and heparin in pediatric doses is packaged almost identically. Almost identically. And one day, the pharmacy technician misstocked the neonatal ICU's medication cabinet with adult-dosed heparin. So a number of nurses pulled out the heparin, being used to only seeing pediatric medications in there, and pulled out a heparin vial that is virtually identical to the one they're used to using, and inadvertently gave these infants adult-dosed heparin, and some of the babies died. And again, you could do what they did in Wisconsin, which is just blame the nurse and think that you're going to feel better and say how they didn't follow the five rights. Or you could do what they did in Indiana, which was, instead of saying who screwed up and how do we punish them, they said what went wrong and how do we prevent this from recurring. The first thing this hospital did was have a press conference. That's the first thing they did, was embrace the Joint Commission and the ISMP and the Institute of Medicine's approach now, which is that we want transparency in healthcare. That's the first thing they did. And when they were asked who's to blame, their response was, we are. We as an institution are. We are not blaming our nurses. We're not blaming our pharmacists. We're not blaming any of our providers or our employees. This is an institutional problem, and we as a hospital are taking responsibility for it. And our approach to this will be to do a root cause analysis, look at all the contributing factors, find out how this happened, and change our systems so that this can never recur. The other thing they did, which I really give them tremendous credit for, and I would love to see as the model for how we approach these problems in other institutions, is they put in stress rounds for these nurses. They immediately recognized that these nurses had been traumatized and had them treated for PTSD and supported them. Because if you've ever been involved, and all of us who are in healthcare in some way at some point in our career have been involved in an incident where someone was harmed, you know that it's devastating if you're the one that has any responsibility for it at all. It's very, very traumatizing. Mm-hmm. And this institution recognized that and got the people in that were necessary, the critical incident debriefing team, to assist these nurses. All but one of these nurses actually returned to work and were working in the neonatal ICU, whereas the nurse in Madison, Wisconsin will probably never practice again.
Right.
Because of this experience.
Mm-hmm. You hit three key points, actually, in both these cases that you just described. Actually, equipment not available. You said that the nurse didn't have the right tubing there for her. The stress factor, 60-hour-plus work week, and then in the other case, the adult heparin and pediatric heparin looking alike. To break those down, how many times in a hospital is equipment not available, and that just makes it more stressful for the nurse trying to quickly hurry up and get everything she needs to get done to provide medications or whatever she's doing? That's a key factor. The stress, we could talk about that, because that leads to a lot of burnout and nurses leaving, and we know we can't afford nurses to leave, especially with the nursing shortage that we're having right now, and then with that identical packaging. Now, with the heparin, are these companies working to change that? Are they trying to make the packaging different so it's easily recognizable to nurses or whoever gives these medications?
Well, I do think that they're doing that, unfortunately, and I don't mean to sound too cynical. Mm-hmm. I don't think as a result of pressure from healthcare providers to do it, or as a result of the fact that infants were actually harmed and that children were hurt as a result of it. I think that they are now because there's a lawsuit.
Okay.
After this incident happened in Indiana, the bigger profile case out in California was when Dennis Quaid's infant
right.
children
mm-hmm.
had the same exact error occur. And they did not sue the hospital. They did not sue the mm-hmm. nurses. They did not sue the providers. They sued the pharmaceutical company
right.
for the look-alike, sound-alike packaging, because that's where the error really is, ultimately, and that would have prevented it had you done something like that. But you do need to look at fatigue and sleep deprivation and its impact on performance
mm-hmm.
and nurses working way, way too many hours, and the fact that we are an aging workforce now, and you just can't do in your 50s what you could do in your 20s. I mean, that's the reality. Patients are much sicker. The care they're receiving is much more complex, and we're getting older. That's a bad combination, and you have to look at all that. And it is an issue with not having all the supplies you need, or at least they're not all in the same place, mm-hmm. or you have to wait for pieces, or you don't have the equipment that you need, or you're dealing with systems failures all the time. The Institute of Medicine did some wonderful studies on the amount of time that is spent with nurses not able to perform our surveillance function of monitoring patients for foreseeable complications, because we're instead spending a huge amount of time either in non-nursing functions or in dealing with system failures that just suck all of our time and energy away from us, so we're not available there to monitor our patients. So all those are issues that really need to be addressed, and patients will never be safe in our facilities if we don't start addressing the underlying causes of error.
Right. For right now, the listeners that are listening right now, actually, though, this could be quite scary for them if they know that if they've been a patient in the hospital or a family member in the hospital. So it's really important for them to be aware of what medications they're given and always speak up and ask questions and to make sure, too, that they're getting the right medication. I know they may be a little hesitant to do that because they may be intimidated by the staff, but really they need to be proactive and speak up and make sure that they're getting the right medications, because of everything that we just mentioned. I mean, human error does happen, and you don't want that. You want everybody to stay safe, and the stress factor is out there, so it's really important for the listeners to know that they can speak up and ask questions and make sure that the medications that are ordered are the ones that they are getting. I mean, that's easy to say, right? It's easy to say, and when you're there in the hospital, everything that goes on, it could be very, very overwhelming and scary, but just to let them know that they can ask questions. It's their right to do so.
And that is what we're trying to push right now for safety, is to create a culture of safety. You get rid of that safety, that culture of blame and shame. Mm-hmm. We want transparency. We want someone we want error reporting, because that allows us the opportunity to make our system safer by analyzing how this error could occur or how this potential error could occur. When you have a punitive system, when you have a shame and blame system, nurses and even patients are hesitant to come forward and say, this may be wrong, or I don't know what I'm doing, or I need assistance with this, or I need someone to review that with me. If you work in a culture of a punitive or a culture of blame type of environment, that in itself creates a safety issue for patients. Mm-hmm. If I am a nurse and I make a medication error in Madison, Wisconsin, I'm not sure I'm going to come forward. I mean, generally, I have integrity and admit my mistakes, but if I have to worry about going to jail for 6 years because I made an error, I'm not going to be very readily willing to go to somebody and say I made a mistake. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, if when I make a mistake, I know the response to that when I identify it will be, good, this is great, this is an opportunity to improve our systems and make patients safer in the future, let's look at all the things that are contributing factors that allowed this mistake to happen, then I'm going to come forward. And so this is part of why our whole culture has to shift, to stop blaming individuals and start looking at systems. We don't want to drive error reporting underground. Mm-hmm. This is my largest concern with criminalizing human error, with threatening to send these nurses in Indiana who made a heparin error to jail, with threatening to send this nurse in Madison, Wisconsin to jail. This is my biggest concern about this, is the impact of that will be that it will have a chilling effect on transparency, mm-hmm. and a chilling effect on error reporting, and it will drive error reporting underground, which ultimately makes it much more dangerous for patients.
Are these nurses being supported by the hospitals or wherever they're working? If a medication error does occur and they do report it, do they receive support from them, or are they just frowned upon?
It depends on the institution they're in. Mm-hmm. Some institutions have really made heroic leaps into getting out of the old culture and making it a complete paradigm shift into creating a culture of safety. Mm-hmm. And in those cultures, nurses are coming forward. And many, many errors are being prevented because of that transparency and because of that error reporting or potential error reporting. Mm-hmm. In cultures where we still haven't had this blame and shame and, well, ultimately you're the end provider, so you're the one responsible, then no, there isn't going to be as much error reporting, and as a result, patients are not going to be safer. And this is something that all the safety safety experts are saying now. This is what the Joint Commission is saying. This is what the Institute of for Safe Medication Practice is saying. And this is what the Institute of Medicine is saying. This is what the healthcare quality people are saying. This is what all of the experts are saying. We need to make a paradigm shift in our healthcare culture to stop blaming individuals and start looking at systems and make it an environment, a culture where people do come forward with mistakes and do come forward and say, I don't know what I'm doing. I've never worked at this machine before. Someone needs to show me how to do it. There, you also need to have a culture where there is zero tolerance for physician abuse, zero tolerance. Mm-hmm. So that when you have a nurse that has a question, because maybe this says IV, maybe it says IM, maybe it says 50 milligrams, maybe it says 5.0 milligrams, I can't tell, that nurse has zero hesitancy in seeking clarification on the order from a physician. Or I'm not really happy with the urine output or the vital signs on this patient. I need the physician's input on this and not have to worry that the response is going to be, why are you calling me about this? Why are you bothering me with this? Or get any kind of a hard time or grief, because those cultures where the physicians are allowed to behave that way are dangerous for patients.
Right, yeah. Nurses should never be hesitant, though, to question anything with the physicians. I really believe that they work together, and there should be no doubt at all that that the nurse is interfering in any way with the physician's time, so to speak. I mean, it really has to be a culture of working together for the good of the patient.
That's right. And there needs to be administrative and management at the very high level support for a zero tolerance policy. Mm-hmm. The whole burden for this should not be on the individual nurse who has to interact with the physician. The burden for this really should be on the administration hospital to create a zero tolerance policy. Mm-hmm. Because it's a safety issue. Nurses have been saying this all along, but this is not just a morale issue or a quality of life issue for nursing. This is a safety issue for patients.
Right. Mm-hmm. How many nurses are being prosecuted for errors? Is there a number?
Well, I don't know what the actual number would be, and that would be hard to tell because mm-hmm. these prosecutions are not going to be federal. They're going to be state-driven because the criminal law, for the most part, criminal law for these types of things is going to be state-driven, and so it's going to be state by state that these things happen and how much of this is published and how much of it's available. It would be a great study for a law student or a nursing student to do, but you'd have to collect the data in all 50 states to really get some information. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the level of physicians compared to nurses or physicians and nurses compared to pharmacists would be. Mm-hmm. My focus has been primarily on the nursing issue. But, you know, there are some cases like the one in Louisiana where you had physicians and nurses at the same time being prosecuted or being threatened with prosecution for human error. And, you know, error is one thing, judgment is another. But to criminalize something is really worrisome. If you make a med error, if you make a diagnostic error as a physician, if you have a clinical error problem, it could be a lot of different things. It could be negligence. It could be malpractice. It could be a lot of things. What it's not is a crime.
Mm-hmm. Right, unless it was intentional.
Exactly.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
What's the recommendation by the Joint Commission and these other organizations? What are they saying that needs to be done and will be done to prevent this?
To prevent what, the error or the criminalization?
Errors and the whole system that's failing. What's their recommendations to fix that?
Their recommendations are one, that we create a paradigm shift in our healthcare institutions, that we get out of the culture of blame and shame, and that we create a culture of safety, and that the commitment to that occur from the very, very top levels of the institution. That's one recommendation they're making. Another recommendation that they're making is that we do a root cause analysis or a failure modes and effects analysis on all error for potential errors and also for errors that have already occurred, and that we have those also be completely non-punitive systems. So if you have M&Ms or you have any other kind of peer review or any kind of whatever your institutionally based program is for looking at errors, that it not be a punitive approach, that it be an error finding or a system fault finding mission to create safer systems for us, and that you use every error that occurs as an opportunity to improve your systems, not to punish your providers.
Now are these hospitals adapting the root cause analysis, or is it up to the hospital if they want to do this, or is this something that the Joint Commission is saying that every hospital needs to do?
Yeah, it's not really a suggestion. Mm-hmm. I mean, supposedly Joint Commission accreditation is voluntary. You know, you don't need to have Joint Commission accreditation. You do it on a voluntary basis.
Mm-hmm.
The reality is that unless you specialize in diseases of the rich, you do need to have Joint Commission accreditation, because without it, you won't get Medicaid and Medicare reimbursement. You won't participate in those programs without Joint Commission accreditation. And when the Joint Commission says this is what they want you to do, they mean it. They mean this is what they want you to do. And they are very serious about wanting people to create a culture of safety and get rid of a culture of blame, because safety depends on it.
Are hospitals changing? Are they doing this?
I think they are. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's happening. I think it's happening at a glacial pace.
Mm-hmm.
But in some institutions, it's happening much faster than others. And, you know, I lecture to nurses throughout the whole country, and I ask them, how many of you think you are working in a culture of safety? And every time I ask that, more hands go up, that we are making the transition, we are making the change.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting is, and there's no science to this at all, it's just the feedback I get from nurses, is the resistance to creating that paradigm shift is not coming from the staff nurses, and it's not coming from the upper-level management. It's really coming from mid-level managers who don't buy into it, because they still think that, you know, individuals have to be held personally accountable. And it's not either-or. It's not like it's binary, it's on or it's off. It's either the personal individual responsibility or an institutional culture of safety. It really is both. It's not either-or, but it's the middle managers that are having some problems with that.
Mm-hmm.
So there needs to be support for that culture change. But other things that they're recommending, just in terms of medication safety, are barcoding systems and PICSA systems and computer order entry and automating our systems and not having the old paper-driven systems because they're too error-prone. Things that nurses have been asking for all along, and we've always been told, oh, no, we can't do it, it's too expensive, we can't budget for it, the initial outlay is too costly, we can't do it. And now that the Joint Commission is saying, well, no, we really want you to do this, finally we'll start doing it. We won't do it because nurses have been asking us to do it. We'll do it because you won't be getting your accreditation unless you do it pretty soon.
You would think that they'd want to do this, though, for the safety of the patients. Everything should be done, a system of checks and balances should be just precise to the max, just keeping these patients safe. They should do anything that they can to keep patients alive and safe. I don't understand why there's hesitancy with it. But, Edie, 30 seconds, what message do you want to get out to the listeners?
Which listeners, the professional providers or the patients?
Anyone. Listeners, the general public, the professional providers. What's the message?
I would say to everyone that it is a knee-jerk, almost reflexive response when something goes wrong to quickly say, who screwed up? Or to say, oh, come on, that's common sense. How could anyone have been that dumb? I would say to all of us, just recognize that that is our culture, and not just providers, that even for the lay public, that is our culture. Just recognize that that's what you've done. Take a deep breath, step back, and then change your questions.
Great.
So that it's no longer who screwed up, it is what went wrong.
Great.
It's no longer how do we punish someone, it's how do we prevent it from recurring. How do we use this opportunity to make our system safer?
Edie, thank you. The 30 minutes goes by so quickly.
It really does.
Thank you so very much for joining us. Thanks for sharing your insights, expertise, and sharing with the listeners the whole legal side of nursing. This topic is definitely one that needs attention, and hopefully keeps going on. It's easy to place blame, but we really need to focus on the root cause. Every patient really deserves great nursing care. Nurses should not be subjected to this system. Nurses are professionals. They save lives. Thanks, Edie, so much. For more info, go to healthandthirty.com. And listeners, as always, if there's a health topic you want to know more about, email us. Go to contactus@healthandthirty.com. And don't forget, if you have a health question, send it in to healthandthirty.com, and the experts will answer it. Thanks for listening. I'm Barbara Ficarra for Health and 30. Have a great week. Stay safe and healthy. And as always, speak up and ask questions. And make sure you know what medication you're getting when you're in the hospital. And for more info and upcoming shows, keep a check here at healthandthirty.com. I'm Barbara Ficarra for Health and 30. Have a great Memorial Day. Keep it safe. See you next week.
AM 1300, WRCR, Spring Valley.
AP Radio News. I'm Diane Kepley. Gas prices are now averaging more than $3.88 a gallon nationwide. And as a lot of people head out for the long weekend, some travel plans are being changed. This man at a rest stop on the New Jersey Turnpike says his family is camping this year instead of staying at a hotel.
For $25, we're right on the beach, on the ocean almost, with our tent and with our little gas guzzler.
What?
All the camping equipment, including wood,